Welcome to Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. Happy Friday. We made it another week. And today, Joe Biden is calling out grocery stores. Yes, he is standing up to big grocery industrial complex and telling them, hey, times are tough out here for people. All right. They're dealing with Bidenomics. They're dealing with Bidenflation. And you guys are the bad ones. And you, I'm going to need you to just lower your prices, all right? I'm standing up for the American people. Also, the Michigan mom who is on trial for involuntary manslaughter after her son shot up his school, wounding 11 people and killing four. Should she go to prison for her neglect of her son's mental health issues and his welfare? We will get into that. But first, yesterday, 150 House Democrats voted against a bill that would deport non-citizens convicted of a DUI. This was introduced by Representative Barry Moore of Alabama. It is the Protect Our Communities from DUIs Act, which seeks to amend the Immigration and Nationality Act to stipulate that non-citizens, quote, who have been convicted of or who have committed an offense while driving while intoxicated or impaired, end quote, by drugs or alcohol, are inadmissible and deportable. Now, it did pass. It passed with 215 Republicans, 59 Democrats voting in favor of the bill, but 150 Democrats opposed it. Now, infamous squad member Rashida Tlaib said that the bill would mean that our immigrant neighbors who came here lawfully and who have resided in our communities for decades could be deported and ripped from their families due to one misdemeanor DUI conviction, creating a a separate and unequal system of justice, she says. Unequal system of justice. Huh. Interesting. You know what's an unequal system of justice? Putting Americans in harm's way in favor of immigrants who don't even appreciate the privilege of being in this country. Yes, it's a privilege to be here, which is why people are flooding through our open borders, which consequently also means it's not going to be a privilege for very long. We will turn into a third world country if we keep it up. But for now, it is still considered a privilege to be here. If you don't appreciate and respect that privilege, you need to go. Get out. Scram. I don't care how long you've been living here in the country, legally or illegally. It is still our country and our citizens' safety that you are jeopardizing. I can't believe the unequal system of justice. Tell that to the family of Melissa and Riordan Powell, who were killed by illegal alien Jose Menevar, who already had three DUI previous convictions and was let out on work release by the judge. You want to talk about unequal system of justice? All of the Americans who are forced to be victims of crimes committed by non-citizens just fiscal year 2023. 1,254 non-citizens charged with assault, battery, domestic violence, 864 burglary and robbery, 2,493 DUIs, many of which I am sure resulted in Americans dying or being seriously injured, 2,055 illegal drug possession or trafficking charges, 29 homicides, over 200 sexual offenses, many of which did not have to be if we would just get serious about closing the damn border. Someone who has seen the devastating impact of the Democrats' open border policy is Julio Rosas. He is field reporter and author of Fiery But Mostly Peaceful, who is in San Diego right now. Julio, I see you. Welcome to the show. You're in a hotel, but you are right on the border right now, correct?
Yes, that is correct. Unfortunately, I'm in California.
Unfortunately, you are in California, San Diego. I don't know how you do it. You must have to take 20 showers every time you get back from California. But tell me, what are you seeing right now on the border today in San Diego?
Well, so a lot of my reporting and time at the border has been mostly in Texas, and that's because Texas is the largest share of the U.S.-Mexico border. It's been heavily impacted in the Del Rio sector in the Rio Grande Valley. But one of the reasons why I'm here now in San Diego is because of the efforts of Governor Abbott, you know, making a strong stance and saying Shelby Park is closed off. We're going to, you know, make sure that no one illegally enters through here. We are now starting to see the pattern shift. And so that's why Arizona and California are seeing an uptick in illegal crossings, and that's significant because it shows that the message is being received in the migrants in Mexico, and they say, well, Texas is kind of a hit or miss. You know, you don't really know if you're going to enter Border Patrol custody or Texas DPS custody, so they're going to start funneling people through these other states right now. And so it's very interesting. That's not to say Texas is completely sealed off. You know, right. Unfortunately, Shelby Park's only 2 miles as opposed to 1,000 yeah. miles. But it shows that even making a strong stand in one area does have an impact through people that are in Mexico, because as much as it is easier to get into the United States illegally, they need to make sure that they get in at the right place and they present themselves to the right people.
Yeah. So there's a lot that has been going on in California. You mentioned, because I'm sure due to in large part because of what's happening in Texas, Greg Abbott at least taking somewhat of enforcement on the border, even though, as you do point out, it is a very small area that we're talking about here. But even so, we have seen more boats coming, just speeding onto the beach and dumping off a bunch of illegal immigrants. Here's one right now where bystanders caught this boat that just comes speeding onto shore. And it's almost like a clown car where all these people just start, you know, unloading. And then they're here, Julio. We've also seen, moments where coyotes are dropping off illegal migrants. Most of them are, military age males, not from just Mexico and, Latin America. We're talking about China, Turkey, India. I mean, at San Diego County, where you're at, here is some of that. So coyotes just like, all right, here's your stop. Here you go, guys. So it's been nice. It's been swell. But I'm going to go pick up the rest of my people and bring them right back here where you can just walk right on through this busted wire. And this is the type of thing that's happening right where you are at today in San Diego County. How bad does it really get down there, Julio?
Well, it's interesting because where that's being taken place, that video that you're just playing right now, there was new construction of the border wall that was being created under President Trump. And I was there shortly after President Biden signed the executive order to halt construction of the border wall. And I was being shown around by the construction crew. One gentleman said, like, I might be fired, but it doesn't matter because we're all out of a job next week anyway. And so he at the time, so back in 2021, he said that illegal crossings in their construction area had started to decrease because people were seeing that a wall was being constructed. Mm-hmm. But when the order made news and word got out that people were now able to there was no longer a border wall being constructed, they saw an increase in people illegally crossing back into the construction area yet again. So now, a couple years later, we were seeing the effects of when you don't have the infrastructure and you don't have the policies in place to deter illegal crossings. Yeah, people are going to brazenly cross in broad daylight. I mean, you have to remember the stereotype for illegal immigration used to be you're crossing in the dead of night trying to avoid Border Patrol. And now people don't even care that there's news cameras around in broad daylight to drop people off. And of course, if people want to be caught. I mean, so it's just the entire thing has been turned on its head, and it has many consequences beyond just the border counties when it comes to the economy, when it comes to jobs, when it comes to public safety. We just saw the recent video of the NYPD cops being beat down in Times Square by Venezuelan illegal immigrants. So I've been trying to make people aware that this, yes, it starts at the border, but there's so many effects that happen further within the country.
Yeah. And I think I would like to mention, Julio, you are talking to a Gonzalez. You are, of course, a Rosas. OK, so I'm sure you get this, too, where people are like, I can't believe you would be a traitor. And how could you possibly be against people coming here who share your skin tone? And it's like, guys, this is about the safety and security of the country. I could not care less about the color of someone's skin or if they have a similar sounding last name as me. Let's think outside the box here, guys. Like, it's just so frustrating to hear people always think that, like, oh, well, you guys guys have similar sounding last names, so you should stick together on this. But I want to ask you, because you have done so much great reporting from the border, whether it be in California or Arizona or Texas, what tell the viewers, what are some of the most devastating, horrifying things that you have seen when it comes to all of your field reporting at the border?
So aside from seeing kids as young as 2 or 3 being brought by themselves, you know, they're part of a group, but their parents aren't with them. You know, I've seen a lot of kids who are coming by themselves, you know, who knows what's happened to them, you know, on the way here and then what's happened to them since then. But for those of you, or for those of your viewers who have, who don't know, you know, I covered a lot of the riots in 2020. I saw a lot of crazy stuff, saw a lot of violence. I didn't really see a dead body during that time. The first time I ever saw a dead body was in the Rio Grande, in Eagle Pass. And that's something, the guy was in the water for 5 days, you know, and there's a lot of things that go into that. Yeah. But there's been so much death associated with this, and it, with the illegal immigrants and also American citizens, like, as you know, that example that you pointed out earlier. And there's a direct line from those deaths to the policies being carried out by the Biden administration. I mean, I know it's cliche, and I know people say, well, this politician has blood on their hands or whatever. But like, there is quite literally, you know, Biden and the administration and people carrying out, they do have blood on their hands in relation to this, because when you encourage people to come, as the Biden administration has done, you know, in this manner, you are going to see more deaths just because of how Mexico is with the cartels, the terrain. And then, of course, you know, once they're here, because a lot of the people that are coming, they obviously don't have the thousands of dollars to pay off the smuggling networks right away. So they have to work off that debt in sometimes less than pleasant, you know, jobs. And that's putting it mildly. And so there's just so many different things. And unfortunately, because they're not very well seen, unless, you know, like, I had to literally be with the Eagle Pass Fire Department to see that dead body being picked up. It's very easy for people to not really, you know, just really see that impact. And again, it's not just within the border, it's in our communities as well.
Yeah. I want to ask too, you know, you mentioned the children that you've seen so young, at such a young age, being trafficked like this, and how big of a problem it is. And I completely agree with you. But I wonder how many of the people that you are seeing enter the country illegally are in fact just like military aged males.
That is another concerning aspect, because in 2021, 2022, it was the people that you would easily see would be the family units, mm-hmm. or the kids, right? So it was either the kids or the family units, or people say that they were family units. But now it is just so common to see, yeah, just single adult males. And the Biden administration for so long was saying, like, no, we are detaining and we are removing single adult males. And they're like, well, if that's the case, then why are so many still coming? Because, right. And it's because they're seeing that the single adult males are still being allowed into the country, and they don't even have to sneak in anymore. They don't have to be the gotaways. The attempted gotaways, whenever I've been out with Texas state police, we would see them being the single adult males. But now, like the video you're showing, and what I've encountered in the time since then, since especially 2023, there's no fear, you know, there's no fear. And that's really the kind of common, you know, mindset that criminals, whether they're illegal or U.S. citizens, you know, within blue cities, there's no fear of law enforcement. Yeah. And that's a consequence of 2020. But, you know, that's another topic. But it's crazy. It really is crazy.
Yeah. Well, Julio, I appreciate all of your work and the fact that you are willing to go down there. I'm sure it is not always safe. So I appreciate you sticking your neck out there to show Americans the devastating consequences of illegal immigration. And I would like to, I would just like to ask very quickly, I have to ask, we often talk about the people issue. We don't talk about all of the abandoned animals that are at the border as well. And you actually just recently adopted a puppy at the border. So I have to ask how the puppy is doing.
Yes. So Bella's doing great. She's growing. When we found her abandoned on the Mexican side, she was under 3 pounds. I would say now she's close to 7 pounds. Aww. So she's mostly terrier with some Chihuahua, we're thinking. But she's doing great. And whenever I travel, my mom takes care of her. So she's in good hands.
That's great.
And if people want to support my work, they can go to my Substack, mostlypeaceful.live. I greatly appreciate any support there.
Yeah, please. I appreciate you giving that link out, because it is so important that we support these people who are sticking their necks out there and going down and getting the footage that Americans need to see. So I appreciate all of your work, Julio, and come back soon.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, when we come back, let's talk about Biden's latest blunders, I should say. There are too many of them to keep up with, so hopefully we can get to all of them. First, I want to thank our sponsor, Relief Factor. So if you are someone who is just living in constant pain, you know, you don't think about it because you think this is just the way life is, but it's life-changing. If you can get out of pain, you'd be more patient with your spouse, less grumpy with your kids, which is always a good thing, because pain just affects your everyday life in ways that you just don't even realize. But you can actually do that with Relief Factor. It's an all-natural anti-inflammatory, but it actually works to target the root cause of your pain, which is mostly inflammation in our body. So if you can fight that inflammation, it's not a Band-Aid that's just, you're just going to cover it and then it's still going to be there. You're actually going to get rid of that root cause. So here's what you need to do. Go to Relief Factor's website. They have a 3-week quick start. They say it works for the overwhelming majority of people. 70% of the people who go by that quick start go on to keep ordering it. But you will know at the end of that quick start whether or not it will work for you. Odds are it will, and it can be life-changing. You can go get that at relieffactor.com. That is relieffactor.com. Joining me now is my set neighbor, Stuber Gear, host of Stu Does America, he was very polite. He knocked before he came in.
I did. I mean, it would be rude to just barge in. Though I will say, I want to make something very clear here.
Okay.
Other than you, I am the only person who is on the first week of the News and Why It Matters, the last week of the News and Why It Matters, and the first week of Sarah Gonzalez's brand new program.
You're right.
Yes.
That's how special you are, Stu.
See?
Wow, I love that. Well, I'm glad that you're here today to finish out the first week of Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. And I thought, who better than you to talk about, you know, the week Joe Biden has had?
It's been an interesting one.
Couldn't you say that about the previous weeks of Joe Biden's presidency, though?
Yes, all of them have been adventurous. It's like, for a guy who's incredibly boring, asleep, and incoherent, you'd think it would be boring
asleep.
And dull, right? Yeah. You think it would just be a dull time watching it, but it's not. It's actually quite exciting because, you know, you ever get on like a roller coaster where you feel like you're not exactly sure if it's going to stay on the tracks? That's kind of what I feel like all the time with Joe Biden. Like, I don't know, maybe we'll be in nuclear war next week. Who knows? It's going to be really interesting to watch.
It sure will, Stu. So the latest is that he, in South Carolina yesterday, said that supermarkets should lower prices. It's big grocery industrial complex, big grocery, you know, CEOs, they're greedy. They must be greedy and they need to lower their prices, stop price gouging, stop including, you know, junk fees and all of these. Look, Joe's here for the average American. Right. He's here for you. He's here for me. He's standing up to big grocery and saying, lower the cost, because that's obviously what is causing many Americans to not be able to afford their groceries. Are you big grocery?
Right. And look, it's not just the president of the United States saying this. This is America's leading consumer of ice cream. So the guy knows his grocery products. I can't believe they even try this anymore, right? Like, they've been trying this forever. They always blame the companies and act as if they are the ones doing this. But like, it's such a fundamental misunderstanding of the free market, right? Like, there are how many grocery stores within a 10-mile radius of this place? 30, 40? I don't even know how many, right? Like, they're all over the place. If one comes in and they are like, well, look, everyone is charging 20% more because they're gouging, well, let's just charge 10% more. There would always be a place eventually where it gets down to normal cost. People want to make a little bit of a profit, and then they want to be able to sell and get those customers to come back, not gouge them so much that they never come back and go to the cheaper store. That's how the market works, Sarah. This
really?
Is something you'd think a 1,000-year-old man would know. but he doesn't know it. And this is also sort of a fundamental thing that Democrats are doing right now as we go towards the election, which is like, take a problem that they obviously caused and come up with some harebrained explanation for it, right? Like, you know, you have, obviously this is inflation, right? It's caused by a multitude of things, spending over a long period of time, but government spending mostly juiced by Joe Biden, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we know that. We know the supply chain issues have factored into it a little bit, but it's largely because of that. And what do they say? It's price gouging. Right. Every Walgreens in America in a major city is closed, basically, at this point, right? Yeah. And they all say, you know, gosh, there's a lot of crime around here, and the crime seems to get worse when you don't punish the people who are committing it. I don't know how, that's a crazy line. And then they're like, no, actually, it's the racism of the stores. The stores are racist and they don't want to be open in these communities, so they're closing.
I'm glad that you brought that up about big grocery, because that is something that needs to be brought up, is there not just their greed, but their racism.
Right. There's some homophobia or transphobia mixed into this.
Definitely.
These are all the basic things. And I get that, like, it's hard, right? It's hard to run a campaign when you've failed. Right? Like, it's difficult. Like, Jimmy Carter tried to run for re-election. It's hard.
Right.
Like, I'm not trying to say this is like some easy thing where they could be like, oh, well, actually, let's just do X, Y, and Z, which is totally against our belief system, giving power back to the people. They don't want that to happen. So how do you run a campaign for presidency when the one thing you can't do is the thing that would work? It's hard. It's a really tough task. I mean, the border is another example of this, right? Yeah. Like, they don't control the border. They don't control the border. And then he has to come out and just be like, I'm actually super tough on the border. The Republicans won't let me be tough on the border.
It's like, what?
Bonkers. What human being on earth could possibly believe such a thing? But they expect them to.
They do. And I don't think that they're, like, by and large, the average Democrat is going to believe it. But there is going to be a subset of them that's going to say, well, that's what they said.
Yeah.
That's true. Republicans refuse to compromise on a deal. It's like, well, I mean, maybe because that deal is like, hey, don't worry, we'll cap it at 5,000 illegals per day and also give us more of your money to, shift around Border Patrol so that they can not enforce the border, but just process all of these people into the interior of the country. This little asterisk on this, why Republicans might not like that border compromise. But
yeah, I mean, like, think about this. We're getting about 300,000 people a month crossing the border right now. And like, yes, first, 150,000 would be an improvement over 300,000. There's no doubt about it. No president in history has ever had 300,000. Like, when it was Trump, and even when it was Obama, you were talking about 50,000, 40,000 a day or a month. Now it's 300,000. Well, 150,000 sounds better, but like, there's so many qualifications on that.
You're also admitting that you have the ability to just close the freaking border.
Mm.
Like, what? Why 5,000? How about zero? That's my compromise.
Right.
How about zero?
Right.
You're admitting you can do it. You're admitting that that's the law that should be followed. And you're admitting that there's a problem. So if you can do the thing that solves it, just do the thing that solves it.
That just sounds crazy. I don't know what you're talking about. You're off on a rail. It's fine. I talked to Chuck Holton this week, who does a lot of stuff on the border. He's down there now. He's at the site where they're meeting for this convoy right now. And he was saying that when they were talking to the border agents about how to deal with the border and the razor wire and this whole controversy that's been going on, the border agents are saying, like, we like the fact that there's razor wire put up by Texas because it stops people from coming across the border. Right. But when they asked Kirby about this, he said it prevented border security from doing their job. And, like, the obvious follow-up to that is, like, well, wait a minute. If your job is to keep people out, right, they say it's easier to keep people out. Obviously it is. If there's razor wire, it's harder to cross. Why would you do that? And his response was really interesting. It was that it wasn't that their job was to keep people out. It was their job to process people. Mm-hmm. So it's much easier without razor wire to just let people in, process them, and release them into the country, which is their actual goal here. Like, they're acting as if the problem is not people coming in, but the problem is we don't have enough paperwork or something on the people coming in. That's
the problem. Is you're not making it easier for them to come in, according to the Biden regime. So one more thing on Joe Biden. So I just, I want you to help me work out if this is intentional, if this is Joe Biden just intentionally lying, or if he is just this far gone, because he's done it numerous times. He did it again over the weekend. He was calling a family of one of the soldiers killed in the Jordan attack, which, of course, you know, we could get into. I'm going to go ahead and table that conversation for another, his disastrous response from Iran. But he was talking to this mom, and he again said that he understood what she was going through because his son, Bo, died during his service. Watch.
There's nothing anybody can say or do to ease the pain. I've been there. And by the way, we're promoting her posthumously to sergeant.
Oh, wow. That is the best news I've heard today. Thank you so much. You don't know how much that means to us.
Oh, well, I tell you what, it means a lot to me. My son spent a year in Iraq. That's how I lost him. And,
that's how I lost him.
I, you know, 1% of all these kids are the ones that...
my son spent a year in Iraq.
And Sergeant Sanders.
That's how I lost him.
She has such a, the picture I'm looking at, she has such a beautiful smile across her.
Thank you.
That's... How many times has he done this? Numerous times. Of course, Bo died from cancer. He did not die while he was serving in Iraq. And the president comes out and says this over and over and over again. And he is so far gone. I literally don't know if this is an intentional lie or if he is just so far gone that he actually, that's how he remembers it in his dementia-riddled brain.
Yeah. I mean, and it could be a little bit of both, right? I mean, that's the scary part. Because, you know, let's just say he did lose Bo in Iraq for a second. This moment is not about him.
Right.
Right. Like, this is a moment about someone who's lost their child. And while there is something there to say, okay, well, I've been through something similar. You know, I can understand the pain you're in. Like, there's something there. I guess we kind of all internalize these things and maybe we bring things up, even though it's really not super appropriate for a president to do that. But then when you add in the fact that he didn't lose his kid in Iraq, it blows your mind. And like, Glenn brought up an interesting point on radio this morning. And he said, I'm waiting for one of these Gold Star families to say, hey, number one, this isn't about you. And number two, you didn't lose your son in Iraq. You lost your son in a hospital bed to cancer, which is also really tragic
and horrible. That's horrible.
But it is not what I'm going through. Stop doing this.
Yeah.
And I can see that. However, I kind of have sympathy for a Gold Star family who's not worried about that, making that point in that moment. What I don't have sympathy for is every journalist in America. The next time this man sits down in front of you, across from a table, across a room, and you are talking, and you have told him, we're going to talk about foreign policy, we're going to talk about the economy, we're going to talk about the election. That's great. However, the first question you should ask him is, why do you keep telling people you lost your son in Iraq? Do you think that's true?
Right.
I would love to know what his answer is.
Yes.
Because he said it so many times. And this is one of the things that journalists don't seem to have the guts to bring up to his face, though they have fact-checked him multiple times on this. He's been telling false stories about his life, and the even like the Washington Post comes out and it's like, hey, like I don't know why he keeps saying that. We keep saying he shouldn't say it anymore. He just keeps doing it. They feel like powerless in this situation. It's it is legitimately scary. You wonder if he is completely lost.
Yes, and so to your point, and then I know we got to take a break, but to your point. I think that I'm not saying it's right. I don't have any sympathy for the journalists either who refuse to ask the tough questions. But you have to wonder if a little bit is going on in their mind that they're just kind of like, I don't want to, like, it's embarrassing for him. It's awkward. I don't want to ask him to his face because, like, I really do believe that I feel sorry. You know, there's an element of like, I feel sorry for him because I do think he's a walking potato and doesn't really have a lot going on upstairs. Like, I have to wonder how much of them is just like they just feel bad for the guy because they know that it's true.
I don't remember them ever feeling worry about embarrassing Donald Trump.
That's a great point.
They were very clear about that. Now, maybe they, and I think this is a real position you could take, which is that Donald Trump, while you might find him offensive in some way if you're a journalist, you don't think he's mentally gone. And this is more like a physical, mental problem that can't be solved. But like, the man is the leader of the free world. If that is the case, we absolutely need to know it. You know, the James O'Keefe thing came out this week where, I mean, this is, I mean, a mid-level guy, but I mean, there's obviously this idea is true in the White House. They are thinking the same thing we are thinking. Right. Like, we talk about our divisions all the time. We are united on this. They might not say it publicly, but they're thinking the exact same thing we are.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, don't feel bad for Joe. Feel bad for us.
Yeah.
Feel bad for America and do something about it. All right. We got to take a quick break. We'll be back. Talk about Jennifer Crumbly. This is the mother of the 2021 Michigan school shooter, Ethan Crumbly. She took the stand this week in her own trial. It's a defense trial. She faces four counts of involuntary manslaughter in the first ever case of a parent being charged in a school shooting. So I want to go through some of this. You know, the prosecutors obviously allege that she and her husband, who is set for trial in March, they ignored pleas for mental health from their son. He's like asking them for mental health support. They dismissed his concerns. And the evidence that the prosecutors have provided is really shocking. It includes Ethan drawing pictures of school shootings, talking about voices in his head just days before one of his parents bought him the 9mm handgun he used in the shooting. And text messages from Ethan to his friends indicated that he asked his parents for mental health help and they laughed at him. Now, here is some of those being shown during the trial this week. Watch.
Okay, so this is from April 4th, and your son's saying, he's on text, sending messages that say, I hear people talking to me and someone in the distance. I actually asked my dad to take me to the doctor yesterday, but he gave me some pills and told me to suck it up. Like, it's at the point I'm asking to go to the doctor. Was there ever a time where he asked to go to the doctor around this time?
I don't think so, no.
Then he says, my mom laughed when I told her. Was there ever a time where he's asking for help and you're laughing?
No.
He writes to his friend, and this is just later that night, but I'm having bad insomnia and paranoia, and I need help. I was thinking of calling 911 so I could go to the hospital, but then my parents would be really pissed. Okay, so this is all one long conversation, is that right?
Correct.
He says, I'm going to ask my parents to go to the doctors tomorrow or Tuesday again, but this time I'm going to tell them about the voices. This text message or instant message thread, did you ever, were you even aware of this?
No.
Do you remember any time where he came and talked to you and said anything about hearing voices?
No.
Do you recall there ever being a time where he asked you for to go to a doctor or to get help, and you said no?
No.
Or left at him?
No.
Now, it wasn't just those text messages, Stu. He also... there were text messages shown in court of just message after message after message of him messaging his mother, trying to get his mother to respond. He's like, I hear noises. You know, nobody's home. A door just slammed. Maybe it's just my paranoia. And he says, can you please answer me? Because she takes so long to answer him, because she's just completely dismissed any of his issues. A couple journal entries that he wrote before the school shooting. I have zero help for my mental problems, and it's causing me to shoot up the effing school. And I want help, but my parents don't listen to me, so I can't get any help. And I just want to get your thoughts here, because of course you saw the mom on the stand saying, no, 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 I didn't know. He never told me. No, no, no. But a concerned parent... Okay, the day of the school shooting, he was caught by a teacher drawing disturbed images of, murders and shootings on his homework. Here is some of that up on the screen. You can see the gun. He wrote blood everywhere. Very disturbing drawings. Okay, so he said, The thoughts won't stop. Help me. Does a concerned parent decline to take him home and instead leave him at the school to go on and hours later shoot up a bunch of his classmates? Is that something that you think that a concerned parent would do?
No, it is very inconsistent with what a concerned parent would do. It's consistent with a parent that is not paying attention at all, right, and doesn't seem to care at all. I mean, certainly adding on to that, buying him a gun, which is what the dad did in this particular case, didn't keep it away from him. Right. And then additionally, the school not checking his backpack for the gun that was there when they brought him into the office. There's a lot of people who can go to blame here. But the actions of the parents here are, inexcusable, incomprehensible. I mean, I have some concern about getting to this place where we're blaming a parent for a child's crimes, right? Like, I think we can go down a road here that is not consistent with sort of, we don't do it the opposite, right? Like, we don't, we never would blame parents for a kid's, kids' debts was a famous conversation at the beginning of the founding of the country. Like, you don't force kids to take on the parents' debts. And some of that, I think I'm worried we could go too far down this road. However, this particular case seems to be such an egregious example. I mean, they never should have let him stay in the first place at the school. He should have been sent home with his parents and honestly, like, probably under police supervision, right? Like, we all know what can happen in these situations, and this was a really clear example of it.
Yeah, obviously the school should not have no, you're taking him home. You don't have an option, or the police, I guess, will take him, one or the other. But I do find it fascinating that, it is the first in the country and we're talking about a parent being responsible. And I do think you're right. There is a line in which you have to draw and say, sometimes you can have the best parent in the world and a kid will still grow up to do horrific things.
Yep. Totally.
And sometimes a parent can do everything and still it's like, I did the best I could and they still turned out to just be evil or insane or whatever the case may be. But here, when you have a child who seemingly, he was 15 when he committed these horrible crimes, which by the way, he's already been found guilty of. When you have a 15-year-old boy who is allegedly calling out for help, begging his parents to help him with his paranoia and his mental health problems. And you have a parent who you can document in this trial. You have a parent who's spending like $20,000 at a time on horseback riding. You have a parent who is engaged in multiple affairs and is completely gone from the home because she's out with all of her boyfriends. You have a parent who clearly doesn't care. I think she should go. I think she should go in prison for a very long time.
I mean, it does seem like this is one of those that crosses that line. I mean, obviously, you got to look at all the evidence by the end of this. But I mean, just by your sort of surface look at this, I mean, it does seem like this is the case. And, I think if you think about it another way, if a parent had a cancer diagnosis and, refused to treat them, was just going out with their boyfriends instead of bringing him to cancer treatment, it would be quite obvious that this would be a real problem. It would be child abuse.
Yes.
And that's kind of what this is. I mean, a lot of people don't take the mental health stuff seriously, and it is really super real. It is something that, while it can at times, be an excuse. I mean, some people do use it as an excuse, right? Like, a lot of people, when they get in situations, they start saying, well, I need to go to rehab, or I've got a mental health problem. We all know that that's part of this. But this is a obvious case. And, everybody's had this situation. I can think of, friends and family members who have, multiple kids, 4 or 5 kids, and just one in the middle just turned out to be a catastrophe. Right. The parents were the same to everybody. The situation was the same. They're in the same loving home. And one just, melted down. That happens, but when it happens, your role as a parent, just like your role as a parent is to feed your children when they're young, your role as a parent is to get them care and do the absolute best that you can. It did not seem like near top priority. And when you're talking about other kids' lives, we both have our kids sitting in school right now. Yeah. If some other parent is doing this type of stuff, our kids are vulnerable. Everybody's vulnerable, and that's unacceptable.
Exactly. Stu, I appreciate you joining me for my first week on Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered.
I can't believe I made it.
You're always going to make the cut. Nice. Okay. All right. I appreciate you. Make sure that everyone within the sound of my voice, make sure you are subscribed to Stu Does America. You can find it on YouTube and also wherever you get your podcasts. And you know what? Subscribe to both. All right.
Yeah. Just listen to her.
Just do it.
By the way, it's your birthday. Congratulations.
Oh, thank
Happy
you.
Birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you. Yes, it is my birthday, Groundhog Day. All right, we got to take a break. We'll be right back. Well, we have loved getting all of your voicemails over at Welfare Check. If you guys have not yet called us, left us a voicemail, make sure to do that. It's 888-969-5113. Tell us whatever you need to get off your chest, or if you have a question, you need some advice, go ahead and let us know over at Welfare Check. And I wanted to play, those of you, you've been so sweet sending messages of, you know, congratulatory messages and just very, very nice. And I wanted to play some of you guys from this week. Watch.
You had a fucking awesome show. That was a great start. I'll be watching you for years to come, hopefully. Joe Biden.
Playing a Welfare Check on the gumball machine where you had safety.
Oh, the gumball machine.
I haven't seen it on your show.
It's.
I hope it's good.
It's right back there. It's fine. I promise.
Great show, by the way. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think you're great, Sarah. You're a real professional, and you could work for any news organization out there. And I think somebody should try to get you on Gutfeld.
I agree.
All right? Thanks.
Thank you.
Hey, Sarah. It's really nice to get to see your shoes.
Your set looks 10 times better than the gumball machine.
Yes.
Darling, you keep doing what you do. You're doing a good job.
You guys are so sweet.
Sarah, I've got nothing negative to say about you. I like your show. I enjoy it. You're very informative.
Thank you.
I really did like your news and why it mattered, but this new show seems to be even better.
Aww.
I love you, girl. God bless you. Be safe.
You guys
hey,
are
Sarah.
So sweet.
My name's Julie. I live in Denham Springs, Louisiana. I just wanted to tell you that I love your show. I watch every single day. I love you and Yaku and Chad and Stu, and I love
you just
everybody.
Saw Stu. Yaku is back
I
next week,
to give
by
you
the way.
Some love because
for those
I know
of you wondering.
You get so much hate because of all the crazy people that are
Thank
out
you.
There. So I just wanted to send you some love today and know that you have lots and lots of fans who just
you guys
adore
are
you.
Make me cry.
And keep doing God's work, and
so nice.
I'll continue to watch every day. Bye.
Wow.
Hey, Sarah. My name is Francine.
Hi,
and
Francine.
And I just want to tell you, I don't need to vent about anything. We love you. You look great on any set. And I only wish you could clone yourself and put yourself out there some more. God bless
That's
you
so
and
sweet.
Take care of you. And look forward to many, many more shows with you.
Thank you, Francine.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Hey, Sarah. James, fellow Texan, out of Seguin. Just want to say, appreciate your new show. It's awesome. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
Hey, Sarah. This is Travis in South Carolina. I watch you guys every...
I guess you guys did not think we were really going to play these, did you?
And I'm watching a new show tonight. I guess Monday, your first new show. And it's fantastic so far. I got about 30 seconds left. So far, so good. Good job. See ya.
Well, I hope the last 30 seconds I nailed.
I watched it. And, hey, did you see the drone they can't identify? They thought it was a U.S. drone. It probably was. It's one that Biden gave them at the Afghanistan withdrawal where that drone came from. But anyway, thanks for the show.
Hey, my left knee itches really bad. Oh, wait, never mind. I scratched it. Take care.
Hello, I'm Sarah in Dallas. My name is Heather. I live in New Orleans. I just wanted to let you know that I love all of the stuff that you do. I think you're hysterical. And I'm a big bitch, so if you ever need some backup, you just let me know. I'll get them, all right? But also, I would never, ever name my cat Vagina, but I definitely want to get a little baby weenie dog, and I want to name him Richard. You go ahead and go with that. All right, have a great day. Bye.
I see what you did there. a wiener dog named Richard. I got it. You guys are so sweet. Thank you guys for all of the congratulatory messages. It's been a hell of a week here. First week of Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered, and we appreciate each and every one of you being along for the ride. I think that we have a couple more welfare checks. Let's go ahead and play one more.
Hi, Sarah. My name's Dave. I'm from Ohio. I'm a Christian conservative art professor, which is kind of an oxymoron.
Guys.
Anyway, love your show. I'm glad you got your new digs there, all the pretty pink, which I figured you did on purpose for various reasons. I'm watching your show early in the morning, 6 a.m. to 7 a.m., because my wife hates you. I think she doesn't like me watching a beautiful woman that's super intelligent. I'm glad you got everything. Take care.
Oh, no. Your wife hates me. Are you, like, secret watching me? I need to know how this is occurring. You're, like, watching from 6 to 7 in the closet in the dark where she can't see. Is she going to beat you with her shoe if she sees? Please tell. Are you okay? Are you in trouble? Please let me know. Oh, I wish your wife liked me, though. I mean her no harm, I promise. All right, let's go ahead, and I think we do have one more here. Don't worry, we've got a bunch that we will get into in future shows, but let's go ahead and play one more.
Hi, Sarah. This is one of your viewers, Cece. I'm 19 years old, and I live in the States and from Texas. I really love your new show. You really pop in the pink. And you are really incredible, doing what you're doing. Thank you for everything that you do. Your new show looks awesome, and it is, you know, you're just a spitfire, and it is awesome. My family and I try to watch it as much as we can, and we've been watching the news and White Matters, I think, since it came out in 2018. And it's so cool to see how far you've come. Anyways, love the new show, and hope you have a great day.
Aww.
Okay, bye.
I'm going to cry. That's so sweet. Cece, okay, so if you were watching my show, gosh, it's been 6 years, and you've been watching it the whole time. So you were, what, 13 when you started watching my show. Oh my gosh, that's gonna make me cry. Also, I'm just going back through in my mind, thinking of all of the probably inappropriate things that I was saying that you were listening to. But it's fine. It sounds like you turned out great, and you're 19 now, so I don't have to be worried about it anymore. But thank you guys for all of your sweet messages. We appreciate it. And just as a reminder, if you need life advice, you need to ask a question that's been plaguing you, which, by the way, whoever asked the question, which I will play at a certain point, I got to get an answer about why Glenn's clock is 5:03. I'm trying to get you the answer directly from Glenn. But whatever the question may be, even if it's just very random, let us know. Drop us a line over at Welfare Check, and you may hear it, just like those, you may hear it on a future show. And we will be right back. All right, before we go, Nikki Haley tweeted out the other day.
You didn't forget that it's your birthday, so we got you something. Over.
What? Oh, wow.
You messed up my plan. I was going to have Stu explain this and surprise you with it. But it's a tres leches cake to celebrate your...
That is, yes, thank you. A tres leches cake in honor of me being Gonzalez. Look, we're all about diversity, equity, and inclusion here at the news. And I'm sorry, Sarah Gonzalez Unfiltered. Thank you. Happy birthday to me. Thank you, guys. And we'll see you Monday.
Stream and subscribe to more Blaze Media content at theblaze.com/podcasts.